Servant.
King Elokar here?
He's determined to save the city.
Most days, Elokar has trouble saving face, let alone cities.
I like him, Shallan said, despite his Elokar-ness.
He does grow on you, I suppose, like a fungus.
He really wants to do what is right. You should hear him talk about it lately. He wants to be remembered as a good king.
Vanity.
You don't care about how you'll be remembered?
I'll remember myself, which is enough. Elokar, though, he worries about the wrong things. His father wore a simple crown because he needed no reminder of his authority. Elokar wears a simple crown because he worries that something more lavish might make people look at it instead of at him. He doesn't want the competition.
Wit turned away from his inspection of the hearth and chimney.
You want to change the world, Shallan. That's well and good, but be careful. The world predates you. She has seniority.
I'm radiant, Shallan said, shoving another forkful of crumbly sweet bread into her mouth. Saving the world is in the job description.
Then be wise about it. There are two kinds of important men, Shallan. There are those who, when the boulder of time rolls toward them, stand up in front of it and hold out their hands. All their lives they've been told how great they are. They assume the world itself will bend to their whims as their nurse did when fetching them a fresh cup of milk. Those men end up squished. Other men stand to the side when the boulder of time passes, but are quick to say, "See what I did? I made the boulder roll there. Don't make me do it again." These men end up getting everyone else squished.
Is there not a third type of person?
There is, but they are oh so rare. These know they can't stop the boulder, so they walk beside it, study it, and bide their time. Then they shove it, ever so slightly, to create a deviation in its path. These are the men... Well, these are the men who actually change the world. And they terrify me, for men never see as far as they think they do.
Shallan frowned, then looked at her empty plate. She hadn't thought she was hungry, but once she'd started eating... Wit walked past and deftly lifted her plate away, then swapped it with his full one.
"Wit, I can't eat that."
"Don't be persnickety," he said. "How are you going to save the world if you starve yourself?"
"I'm not starving myself," but she took a little bite to satisfy him. "You make it sound like having the power to change the world is a bad thing."
"Bad? No. Abhorrent, depressing, ghastly. Having power is a terrible burden, the worst thing imaginable, except for every other alternative."
He turned and studied her.
"What is power to you, Shallan?"
"It's..." Shallan cut at the Kremling, separating it from its shell. "It's what I said earlier. The ability to change things."
"Things?"
"Other people's lives. Power is the ability to make life better or worse for the people around you."
"And yourself, too, of course."
"I don't matter."
"You should."
"Selflessness is a Vorin virtue, Wit."
"Oh, bother that! You've got to live life, Shallan. Enjoy life. Drink of what you're proposing to give everyone else." "That's what I do."
"You do seem to enjoy yourself a great deal."
"I like to live every day like it's my last," Shallan nodded. "And by that I mean lying in a puddle of my own urine, calling for the nurse to bring me more pudding."
She almost choked on a bite of Kremling. Her cup was empty, but Wit walked past and put his in her hand. She gulped it down.
"Power is a knife," Wit said, taking his seat. "A terrible dangerous knife that can't be wielded without cutting yourself. We joked about stupidity, but in reality most people aren't stupid. Many are simply frustrated at how little control they have over their lives. They lash out,
sometimes in spectacular ways. The cult of moments. They reportedly claim to see a transformed world coming upon us. Be wary of anyone who claims to be able to see the future, Shallan. Except you, of course. Didn't you say you can see where you need to be?
Be wary, he repeated, of anyone who claims to be able to see the future, Shallan.
Pattern rippled on the table, not humming, only changing more quickly, forming new shapes in a rapid sequence. Shallan swallowed. To her surprise, her plate was empty again. The cult has control of the Oathgate platform, she said. Do you know what they do up there every night?
They feast, Wit said softly. And party.
There are two general divisions among them. The common members wander the streets, moaning, pretending to be Spren. But others up on the platform actually know the Spren, specifically the creature known as the Heart of the Revel.
One of the Unmade, Wit nodded.
A dangerous foe, Shallan. The cult reminds me of a group I knew long ago, equally dangerous, equally foolish.
Elokar wants me to infiltrate them. Get onto that platform and activate the Oath Gate. Is it possible?
Perhaps.
Wit settled back.
Perhaps. I can't make the gate work. The Spren of the Fabriel won't obey me. You have the proper key, and the cult takes new members eagerly. Consumes them.
Like a fire needing new logs.
How? What do I do?
Food, he said.
Their proximity to the heart drives them to feast and celebrate.
Drinking in life, she said, quoting his sentiment from earlier.
No. Hedonism has never been enjoyment, Shallan, but the opposite. They take the wonderful things of life and indulge until they lose savor. It's listening to beautiful music performed so loud as to eliminate all subtlety, taking something beautiful and making it carnal. Yet their feasting does give you an opening. I've brushed against their leaders, despite my best efforts. Bring them food for the revel, and I can get you in. A warning, however. Simple soul-cast grain won't satisfy them.
A challenge, then. I should get back to the others. She looked up to Wit. Would you come with me? Join us?
He stood, then walked to the door and pressed his ear against it.
Unfortunately, Shallan, he said, glancing at her, you're not why I am here.
She took a deep breath.
I am going to learn how to change the world, Wit.
You already know how. Learn why.
He stepped back from the door and pressed himself against the wall.
Also, tell the innkeeper I disappeared in a puff of smoke. It will drive him crazy.
The door opened suddenly, swinging inward. The innkeeper entered and hesitated as he found Shallan sitting alone at the table.
Wit slipped deftly around the door and out behind the man, who didn't notice. Damnation, the innkeeper said, searching around. I don't suppose he's going to work tonight.
I have no idea.
He said he'd treat me like a king.
Well, he's keeping that promise.
The innkeeper took the plates, then bustled out.
Conversations with Wit had a way of ending in an odd manner, and, well, starting in an odd manner. Odd all around. Do you know anything about Wit? She asked Pattern.
No, Pattern said. He feels like, one of us.
Shallan fished in her pouch for some spheres. Wit had stolen a few, she noted, as a tip for the poor innkeeper. Then she made her way back to the tailor's shop, planning how to use her team to get the requisite food.
69. Free meal, no strings. The wilting of plants and the general cooling of the air is disagreeable, yes, but some of the tower's functions remain in place. The increased pressure, for example, persists. From drawer 1-1, second zircon. Kaladin drew in a small amount of stormlight and stoked the tempest within. That little storm raged inside him, raising from his skin, haunting the space behind his eyes and making them glow. Fortunately, though he stood in a busy market square, this tiny amount of stormlight wouldn't be enough for people to see in the bright sunlight. The storm was a primal dance, an ancient song, an eternal battle that had raged since Roshar was new. It wanted to be used. He acquiesced, kneeling to infuse a small stone. He lashed it upward just enough to make it tremble, but not enough to send it zipping into the air. The eerie screams came soon after. People started to shout in panic. Kaladin ducked away, exhaling his stormlight and becoming, hopefully, merely another bystander. He crouched with Shallan and Adolin behind a planter. This plaza, with pillared archways on all four sides, sheltering what had once been a great variety of shops, was several blocks away from the tailor's shop. People squeezed into buildings or slipped out onto other streets. The slow ones simply huddled down beside the walls, hands over their heads. The Spren arrived as two lines of bright yellow-white, twisting about one another above the plaza. Their inhuman screeches were awful. Like the sound of a wounded animal dying alone in the wilderness. Those weren't the Spren he'd seen while traveling with Saw and the other Parshmen. That one had seemed more akin to a wind spren. These looked like vivid yellow spheres crackling with energy. They didn't seem to be able to pinpoint the rock directly, and spun over the courtyard as if confused, still screaming. A short time later, a figure descended from the sky, a voidbringer in loose red and black clothing that rippled and churned in the breeze. He carried a spear and a tall triangular shield. That spear, Kaladin thought, long with a slender point for puncturing armor. It was like a horseman's lance. He found himself nodding. That would be an excellent weapon for using in flight, where you'd need extra reach to attack men on the ground, or even enemies soaring around you. The Spren ceased screaming. The Voidbringer looked about, fluttering through the air, then glared at the Spren and said something. Again they seemed confused. They'd sensed Kaladin's use of stormlight, likely interpreted it as a fabrial being used, but now couldn't pinpoint the location. Kaladin had used such a small amount of stormlight the rock had lost its charge almost immediately. The Spren dispersed, vanishing as emotion Spren often did. The Voidbringer lingered, surrounded by dark energy, until horns nearby announced the wall guard approaching. The creature finally shot back into the air. People who had been hiding scuttled away, looking relieved to have escaped with their lives.
"Huh,"
Adolin said, standing. He wore an illusion, imitating, as per Elikar's instructions, Captain Lord Melloran Kahl, Teshev's youngest son, a powerfully built balding man in his 30s. "I can hold stormlight as long as I want without drawing attention," Kaladin said. "The moment I lash something, they come screaming."
"And yet," Adolin said, glancing at Shallan, "the disguises draw no attention."
"Patton says we're quieter than him," Shallan said, thumbing toward Kaladin. "Come on, let's get back. Don't you boys have an appointment tonight?"
"A party," Kaladin said, pacing back and forth in the tailor shop's showroom. Scar and Drahi leaned by the doorway, each with a spear in the crook of his arm. "This is what they're like," Kaladin said. "Your city is practically burning. What should you do? Throw a party, obviously." Elikar had suggested parties as a way of contacting the city's light-eyed families. Kaladin had laughed at the idea, assuming that there wouldn't be such a thing. Yet with minimal searching, Adolin had scrounged up half a dozen invitations. "Good dark-eyed people slave away, growing and preparing food," Kaladin said. But the Light Eyes? They have so much storming time they have to make up things to do. Hey, Scar, Dreyu said. You ever go out drinking, even when at war? Sure, Scar said. And back in my village, we'd have a dance in the storm shelter twice a month, even while boys were off fighting in border skirmishes. It's not the same, Kaladin said.
You taking their side?
Are there sides? Drehi asked. A few minutes later, Adolin came tromping down the stairs and grinning like a fool. He was wearing a ruffled shirt under a powder blue suit with a jacket that didn't close all the way and tails at the back. Its golden embroidery was the finest the shop could provide. Please tell me, Kaladin said, that you didn't bring us to live with your tailor because you wanted a new wardrobe. Come on, Cal, Adolin said, inspecting himself in a showroom mirror. I need to look the part. He checked his cuffs and grinned again. Yokska came out and looked him over, then dusted his shoulders.
I think it pulls too tightly through the chest, right, Lord?
It's wonderful, Yokska.
Take a deep breath.
It was like she was a storming surgeon, the way she lifted his arm and felt at his waist, muttering to herself. Kaladin had seen his father give physicals that were less invasive.
I thought that straight coats were still the style, Adolin said. I have a folio out of Leofor.
Those aren't up to date, Yokska said. I was in Leofor last mid-peace, and they're moving away from military styles. But they made those folios to sell uniforms at the Shattered Plains.
Storms! I had no idea how unfashionable I was being.
Kaladin rolled his eyes. Adolin saw that in the mirror, but just turned around, giving a bow.
Don't worry, bridge boy, you can continue to wear clothing to match your scowl.
You look like you tripped and fell into a bucket of blue paint, Kaladin said, then tried to dry off with a handful of parched grass.
And you look like what the storm leaves behind, Adolin said, passing by and patting Kaladin on the shoulder. We like you anyway. Every boy has a favorite stick he found out in the yard after the rains.
Adolin stepped over to Scar and Drehi, clasping hands with each of them in turn.
You two looking forward to tonight?
Depends on how the food is in the dark-eyed tent, sir, Scar said.
Swipe me something from the inner party, Drehi said. I hear they've got storming good pastries at those fancy Light Eyes parties.
Sure. You need anything, Scar?
The head of my enemy fashioned into a tankard for drinking, Scar said. Barring that, I'll take a pastry or seven.
I'll see what I can do. Keep your ears open for any good taverns that are still open. We can go out tomorrow.
He strode past Kaladin and tied on a side sword. Kaladin frowned, looking to him, then to his bridgeman, then back at Adolin.
What?
What? Adolin asked.
You're going to go out drinking with bridgemen?
Kaladin said.
Sure, Adolin said. Scar Drehi and I go way back.
We spent some time keeping His Highness from falling into chasms, Scar said. He repaid us with a bit of wine and good conversation.
The king entered, wearing a more muted version of the same style of uniform. He bustled past Adolin, heading toward the stairs.
Ready? Excellent. Time for new faces.
The three stopped by Shallan's room, where she was sketching and humming to herself, surrounded by creation spren. She gave Adolin a kiss that was more intimate than Kaladin had seen from the two of them before, then changed him back into Melaran Kahl. Elikar became an older man, also bald, with pale yellow eyes. General Kahl, one of Dalinar's highest officers.
I'm fine, Kaladin said as she eyed him. Nobody is going to recognize me.
He wasn't sure what it was, but wearing another face like that, to him, it felt like lying.
The scars, Elikar said. We need you not to stand out, Captain.
Reluctantly, Kaladin nodded and allowed Shallan to add a light weaving to his head to make the slave brands vanish. Then she handed each of them a sphere. The illusions were tied to the stormlight inside of those. If the sphere ran out, their false faces would vanish.
The group set out, Scar and Drahi joining them, spears at the ready. Syl flitted out from an upper window of the shop, soaring on ahead of them along the street. Kaladin had tested summoning her as a blade earlier, and that hadn't drawn the screamers, so he felt well-armed. Adolin immediately started joking with Scar and Drahi. Dalinar wouldn't have liked to hear they'd gone out drinking. Not because of any specific prejudice, but there was a command structure to an army. Generals weren't supposed to fraternize with the rank and file. It threw wrinkles into how armies worked. Adolin could get away with things like that. As he listened, Kaladin found himself feeling ashamed of his earlier attitude. The truth was, he was feeling pretty good these days. Yes, there was a war, and yes, the city was seriously stressed, but ever since he'd found his parents alive and well, he'd been feeling better. That wasn't so uncommon a feeling for him. He felt good lots of days. Trouble was, on the bad days, that was hard to remember. At those times, for some reason, he felt like he had always been in darkness, and always would be. Why was it so hard to remember? Did he have to keep slipping back down? Why couldn't he stay up here in the sunlight where everyone else lived? It was nearing evening, maybe 2 hours from sunset. They passed several plazas, like the one where they'd tested his surge binding. Most had been turned into living space with people crowding in, just sitting and waiting for whatever would happen next. Kaladin trailed a little behind the others, and when Adolin noticed, he excused himself from the conversation and dropped back.
"Hey," he said, "you all right?"
"I'm worried that summoning a shardblade would make me stand out too much," Kaladin said. "I should have brought a spear tonight."
"Maybe you should let me teach you how to use a side sword. You're pretending to be head of our bodyguards tonight, and you're light-eyed today. It looks strange for you to walk around without a side sword."
"Maybe I'm one of those punchy guys." Adolin stopped in place and grinned at Kaladin.
"Did you just say punchy guys?"
"You know, ardents who train to fight unarmed."
"Hand to hand?"
"Hand to hand."
"Right," Adolin said. "Or punchy guys, as everyone calls them."
Kaladin met his eyes, then found himself grinning back.
"It's the academic term."
"Sure. Like swordy fellows, or spearish chaps."
"I once knew a real axolaceous bloke," Kaladin said. "He was great at psychological fights."
"Psychological fights?"
"He could really get inside someone's head." Adolin frowned as they walked.
"Get inside?" "Oh!"
Adolin chuckled, slapping Kaladin on the back.
"You talk like a girl sometimes. I mean that as a compliment."
"Thanks."
"But you do need to practice the sword more," Adolin said, growing excited. "I know you like the spear and you're good with it. Great. But you're not simply a spearman anymore. You're going to be an irregular. You won't be fighting in a line holding a shield for your buddies. Who knows what you'll be facing?"
"I trained a little with Zahil," Kaladin said. "I'm not completely useless with a sword, but part of me doesn't see the point."
"You'll be better if you practice with a sword, trust me. Being a good duelist is about knowing one weapon, and being a good foot soldier, that's probably more about training than it is about any single weapon. But you want to be a great warrior? For that, you need to be able to use the best tool for the job. Even if you're never going to use a sword, you'll fight people who do. The best way to learn how to defeat someone wielding a weapon is to practice with it yourself."
Kaladin nodded. He was right. It was strange to look at Adolin in that bright outfit, stylish and glittering with golden thread, and hear him speak real battle sense. "When I was imprisoned for daring to accuse Amaram, he was the only light eyes who stood up for me." Adolin Kolin was simply a good person, powder blue clothing and all. You couldn't hate a man like him. Storms, you kind of had to like him. Their destination was a modest home by light-eyed standard.
Tall and narrow, at 4 stories high, it could have housed a dozen dark-eyed families.
All right, Elokar said as they drew near. Adolin and I will feel out the light eyes for potential allies. Bridgman, chat with those in the dark-eyed guard tent and see if you can discover anything about the Cult of Moments or other oddities in the city.
Got it, Your Majesty, Dreyu said.
Captain, he said to Kaladin, you'll go to the light-eyed guard tent. See if you can
find out anything about this High Marshal Azure person, Kaladin said. From the Wall Guard.
Yes. We will plan to stay relatively late, as intoxicated party guests might share more than sober ones.
They broke, Adolin and Elokar presenting invitations to the doorman, who let them in, then gestured Drahi and Scar toward the dark-eyed guard's feast, happening in a tent set up on the grounds. There was a separate tent for people who were light-eyed but not landowners. Privileged, but not good enough to get in the doors to the actual party. In his role as a light-eyed bodyguard, that would be the place for Kaladin. But for some reason, the thought of going in there made him feel sick. Instead, he whispered to Scar and Drahi, promising to be back soon, and borrowed Scar's spear just in case. Then Kaladin left, walking the block. He'd return to do as told by Elokar, but while there was enough light, he thought he'd maybe survey the wall and see if he could get an idea of the wall guard's numbers. More, he wanted to walk a little longer. He strolled to the foot of the nearby city wall, counting guard posts on top, looking at the large lower portion that was a natural part of the local rock. He rested his hand on the smooth, strata-lined formation of stone.
"Hey!" a voice called. "Hey, you!"
Kaladin sighed. A squad of soldiers from the wall guard was patrolling here. They considered this road around the city, next to the foot of the wall, to be their jurisdiction, but they didn't patrol any farther inward. What did they want? He wasn't doing anything wrong. Well, running would only stir up a ruckus, so he dropped his spear and turned around, extending his arms out to the sides. In a city full of refugees, certainly they wouldn't harass one man too much. A squad of 5 tromped over to him, led by a man with a wispy dark beard and bright, light blue eyes. The man took in Kaladin's uniform, with no insignia, and glanced at the fallen spear. Then he looked at Kaladin's forehead and frowned. Kaladin raised his hands to the brands there, which he could feel. But Shallan had put an illusion over those, hadn't she? Damnation. He's going to assume I'm a deserter.
Deserter, I assume?
The soldier asked sharply. Should have just gone to the storming party. Look, Kaladin said. I don't want trouble, I just...
Do you want a meal?
A meal?
Free food for deserters.
That's unexpected. Reluctantly, he lifted the hair from his forehead, testing to see that the brands were still visible. Mostly, the hair prevented one from seeing the details. The soldiers started visibly. Yes, they could see the brands. Shallan's illusion had worn off for some reason. Hopefully the other disguises fared better.
A light eyes with a shash brand? Their lieutenant asked. Storm's friend, you've got to have some story.
He slapped Kaladin on the back and pointed toward their barracks ahead.
I'd love to hear it. Free meal. No strings. We won't press you into service. I give my oath.
Well, he'd wanted information about the leader of the wall guard, hadn't he? What better place to get it than from these men? Kaladin picked up his spear and let them lead him away. 70. High Marshal Azure. Something is happening to the sibling. I agree this is true, but the division among the Knights Radiant is not to blame. Our perceived worthiness is a separate issue. From Drawer 1-1, Third Zircon. The Wall Guard's barracks smelled like home to Kaladin. Not his father's house, which smelled of antiseptic and the flowers his mother crushed to season the air. His true home. Leather, boiling stew, crowded men, weapon oil. Spears hung on the walls, white and blue. The place was big enough to house two platoons, a fact confirmed by the shoulder patches he saw. The large common room was filled with tables, and a few armorers worked in the corner sewing jerkins or uniforms. Others sharpened weapons, a rhythmic calming sound. These were the noises and scents of an army well maintained. The stew didn't smell anywhere near as good as rocks. Kaladin had been spoiled by the Horn Eater's cooking. Still, when one of the men went to fetch him a bowl, he found himself smiling. He settled onto a long wooden bench near a fidgety little ardent who was scribing glyph words onto pieces of cloth for the men. Kaladin instantly loved this place, and the state of the men spoke highly of High Marshal Azure. He would likely be some middling officer who had been thrust into command during the chaos of the riots, which made him all the more impressive. Azure had secured the wall, gotten the parchment out of the city, and seen to the defense of Kolinar. Syl zipped around the rafters as soldiers called out questions about the newcomer. The lieutenant who had found him, his name was Noromin, but his men called him Noro, answered readily. Kaladin was a deserter. He had a Shash brand, an ugly one. You should see it. Sadius's mark. On a light eyes, no less. The others in the barrack found this curious, but not worrisome. Some even cheered. Storms. Kaladin couldn't imagine any force of Dalinar's soldiers being so welcoming of a deserter, let alone a dangerous one. Considering that, Kaladin now picked out another undercurrent in the room. Men sharpening weapons that had chips in them. Armorers repairing cuts in leather. Cuts made by lances in battle. Conspicuously empty seats at most of the tables, with cups set at them. These men had suffered losses. Not huge ones yet. They could still laugh. But storms, there was a tension to this room. "So," Noro said, "Shash brand?" The rest of the squad settled in, and a short man with hair on the backs of his hands set a bowl of thick stew and flatbread in front of Kaladin. Standard fare with steamed talu and cubed meat. Soulcast, of course, and lacking flavor, but hearty and nutritious. "I had a squabble," Kaladin said, "with High Lord Amaram. I felt he'd gotten some of my men killed needlessly. He disagreed."
"Amaram," said one of the men. "You aim high, friend." "I know Amaram," the man with hairy hands said. "I did secret missions for him. Back in my operative days."
Kaladin looked at him, surprised.
"Best to ignore Beard," Lieutenant Noro said. "It's what the rest of us do."
Beard didn't have a beard. Maybe the hairy hands were enough. He nudged Kaladin.
"It's a good story. I'll tell it to you sometime."
"You can't just brand a light-eyed man a slave," Lieutenant Noro said. "You need a High Prince's permission. There's more to this story."
"There is," Kaladin said. Then he continued eating his stew.
"Ooh," said a tall member of the squad. "Mystery."
Noro chuckled, then waved at the room.
"So, what do you think?"
"You said you weren't going to press me," Kaladin said between bites.
"I'm not pressing you, but you won't find a place out there in the city where you'll eat as well as you do here."
"Where do you get it?" Kaladin asked, spooning the stew into his mouth. "You can't use soulcasters. The screamers will come after you. Stockpile? I'm surprised one of the High Lords in the city hasn't tried to appropriate it."
"Astute," Lieutenant Noro said with a smile. He had a disarming way about him. "That's a guard secret. But in here there's always a stew bubbling and bread baking." "It's my recipe," Beard added.
"Oh, please," the tall man said. "You're a cook now too, Beard?"
"A chef, thank you very much. I learned that flatbread recipe from a horn-eater mystic at the top of a mountain. The real story is how I got there."
"It's where you landed, obviously," the tall soldier said, "after someone in your last squad kicked you."
The men laughed. It felt warm in here. On this long bench, a well-laid fire burning steadily in the corner. Warm and friendly. A As Kaladin ate, they gave him some space, chatting among themselves. Noro, he seemed less a soldier and more a chummy merchant trying to sell you earrings for your beloved. He dropped very obvious, dangling hints for Kaladin. Reminders of how well-fed they were, of how good it was to be part of a squad. He spoke of warm beds, of how they didn't have to go on watch duty that often, of playing cards while the high storm blew. Kaladin got a second bowl of stew, and as he settled back into his place, he realized something with a shock. Storms. They're all light eyes, aren't they? Every person in the room, from the cook to the armorers to the soldiers doing dishes. In a group like this, everyone had a secondary duty, like armoring or field surgery. Kaladin hadn't noticed their eyes. The place had felt so natural, so comfortable, that he'd assumed they were all dark-eyed, like him. He knew that most light-eyed soldiers weren't high officers. He'd been told that they were basically just people. He'd been told it over and over. Somehow, sitting in that room finally made the fact real to him. "So, Cal," Lieutenant Noro asked, "what do you think? Maybe re-enlist? Give this another try?" "Aren't you afraid I'll desert?" Kaladin asked. "Or worse, that I can't control my temper? I might be dangerous?"
"Not as dangerous as being short-manned," Beard said. "You know how to kill people? That's good enough for us."
Kaladin nodded.
"Tell me about your commander. That will be a big part of any group. I only just got into town. Who is this High Marshal Azure?"
"You can meet him yourself," Beard said. "He does rounds every night around dinner time, checking on each barracks."
Yes, Noro said.
Kaladin eyed him. The lieutenant seemed uncomfortable.
"The High Marshal," Noro said quickly, "is incredible. We lost our former commander during the riots, and Azure led a group who held the wall when the Cult of Moments tried, in the chaos, to seize the city gates.
He fought like a Voidbringer," another squad member said. "I was there. We were almost overwhelmed, then Azure joined us, holding aloft a gleaming shard blade. He rallied our numbers, inspired even the wounded to keep fighting. Storms felt like we had Spren at our backs, holding us up, helping us fight."
Kaladin narrowed his eyes.
"You don't say."
He pried more from them as he finished his bowl. They had nothing but praise for Azure, though the man hadn't displayed any other odd abilities that Kaladin could discover. Azure was a shard-bearer, maybe a foreigner, who had been previously unknown to the guard. But with the fall of their commander and the subsequent disappearance of their High Lord patron at the palace, Azure had ended up in command. There was something else, something they weren't saying. Kaladin helped himself to a third bowl of stew, more to delay to see if the High Marshal really would make an appearance or not. Soon, a disturbance near the door sent men standing up. Kaladin followed suit, turning. A senior officer entered, wearing a glittering chain and a bright tabard, accompanied by attendants, inspiring a round of salutes. The High Marshal wore an appropriately azure cloak, a lighter shade than the traditional Kolin blue, with a mail coif down around the neck, and a helm carried in hand. He was also a she. Kaladin blinked in surprise and heard a gasp from Syl up above. The High Marshal was of average height for an Alethi woman, maybe just under, and wore her hair straight and short, reaching halfway down her cheeks. Her eyes were orange, and she wore a side sword with a glistening silver basket hilt. That wasn't a Lethi design. Was it the aforementioned shard blade? It did have an otherworldly look about it, but why wear it instead of dismissing it? Regardless, the High Marshal was lean and grim and had a couple of serious scars on her face. She wore gloves on both hands.
"The High Marshal is a woman?" Kaladin hissed. "We don't talk about the Marshal's secret," Beard said.
"Secret?" Kaladin said. "It's pretty storming obvious."
"We don't talk about the Marshal's secret," Beard repeated, and the others nodded.
hush, all right?
Hush about it?
Storms, this sort of thing simply didn't happen in Boren society. Not like in the ballads and stories. He'd been in 3 armies, and had never seen a woman holding a weapon. Even the Alethi scouts carried only knives. He'd half expected a riot when he'd armed Lynn and the others, although for Radiance, Yasna and Shallan had already supplied precedent. Azure told the men they could sit down. One of the men offered her a bowl of stew, and she accepted. The men cheered after she took a bite and complimented the cook. She handed the bowl to one of her attendants, and things returned to normal. Men chatting, working, eating. Azure walked to speak with the various officers. First the platoon leader, who would be a captain. The other lieutenants next. When she stopped at their table, she took in Kaladin with a discerning gaze.
"Who is the new recruit, Lieutenant Noro?" she asked.
"This is Cal, sir," Noro said. "Found him haunting the street outside. Deserter with a Shash brand."
"On a light eyes. Storms, man, who did you kill?"
"It's not the one that I killed that got me my brand, sir. It's the one I didn't kill."
"That has the sound of a practiced explanation, soldier."
"That's because it is." Kaladin figured she, at last, would push for more information. She merely grunted. He couldn't place her age, though the scars probably made her look older than she really was.
"You joining up?" she said. "We have food for you."
"Frankly, sir, I don't know. On one hand, I can't believe nobody cares about my past. On the other, you're obviously desperate, which also makes me reluctant." She turned toward Lieutenant Noro.
"You haven't shown him?"
"No, sir. We just got some stew in him."
"I'll do it. Cal, come with me."
Whatever they wanted to show him was at the top of the wall as they hiked him up an enclosed stone stairwell. Kaladin wanted to learn more about the supposed secret that Azure was a woman. But when he asked, Lieutenant Noro shook his head quickly and made a hushing motion. Soon they'd assembled atop the fortifications. The Kolinar Wall was a powerful defensive structure, reportedly over 60 feet tall at points, with a wide wall walk on the top, 10 feet across. The wall rolled across the landscape, enclosing all of Kolinar. It had actually been built on top of the outer wind blades, fitting onto them like an inverted crown, the raised portions matching crevasses between wind blades. The wall was interrupted by guard towers every 300 feet or so. These large structures were big enough to house squads, perhaps entire platoons, on watch.
"Guessing from that brand," Azure said to him, "you were in one of the armies that recruits in the north. You joined up to fight on the Shattered Plains, didn't you? But Sadeus used that army up north to funnel in veterans, plus maybe seize some land now and then from rival high princes. You ended up fighting other Alethi, scared farm boys, instead of shipping off to avenge the king. Something like that?"
"Something like that," Kaladin admitted.
"Damnation me if I blame a man for deserting that," Azure said. "I don't hold it against you, soldier."
"And the brand?" Azure pointed northward. Night had finally fallen, and in the distance, Kaladin could see a glow.
"They advance back into place after each storm," Azure said softly, "and camp a portion of their army out there. That's good battle sense to prevent us from being resupplied, and to make sure we don't know when they'll attack. Nightmares, Cal. A real void-bringer army. If that were an Alethi force, the people in the city wouldn't have much to worry about. Sure, there would be casualties on the wall, but no would-be king of Alethkar is going to burn and pillage the capital. But those aren't Alethi. They're monsters. At best, they'll enslave the entire populace. At worst..." She let the thought dangle, then looked at him. "I'm glad you have a brand. It says you're dangerous, and we have narrow confines up here on the wall.
We can't simply press every eligible man. I need real soldiers, men who know what they're doing.
So that's why I'm here? Kaladin asked. To see that?
I want you to think, Azure said. I tell the men, this wall guard, this is redemption. If you fight here, nobody will care what you did before, because they know if we fall, this city and this nation will be no more. Nothing matters except holding this wall when that assault comes. You can go hide in the city and pray that we are strong enough without you. But if we aren't, you'll be no more than another corpse. Up here, you can fight. Up here, you have a chance.
We won't press you. Walk away tonight. Lie down and think about what is coming. Imagine another night when men are up here dying, bleeding for you. Think about how powerless you'll feel if the monsters get in. Then when you come back tomorrow, we'll get you a wall guard patch.
It was a potent speech. Kaladin glanced to Syl, who landed on his shoulder, then took a long look at the lights on the horizon.
Are you out there, Saw? Did they bring you and the others here?
What of Saw's little daughter, who had collected flowers and clutched playing cards like a treasured toy? Was Chen there? The Parsh woman who had demanded Kaladin retain his freedom despite being angry at him for the entire trip? Winds send that they hadn't been dragged further into this mess. He joined the others in clattering back down the stairwell. Afterward, Noro and the rest of the squad bade him a happy farewell as if certain he'd return. And he probably would, though not for the reasons they assumed. He went back to the mansion and forced himself to chat with some of the guards at the light-eyed tent, though he learned nothing, and his brands made something of a stir among them. Adolin and Elokar finally emerged, their illusions intact. So what was wrong with Kaladin's? The sphere Shallan had given him was still infused. Kaladin gathered Drahi and Scar, then joined the king and Adolin as they started the walk home.
"What has you so thoughtful, Captain?"
Elokar asked.
"I think," Kaladin said, eyes narrowed, "I might have found us another Radiant."
71. A Sign of Humanity. 11 years ago. There weren't enough boats for an amphibious attack on Rathalas, so Dalinar was forced to use a more conventional assault. He marched down from the west, having sent Adolin back to Kolinar, and assigned Satius and his forces to come in from the east. They converged toward the rift. Dalinar spent much of the trip passing through pungent smoke trails from the incense Evie burned in a small censer attached to the side of her carriage. A petition to the heralds to bless her marriage. He often heard her weeping inside the vehicle, though whenever she left it she was perfectly composed. She read letters, scribed his responses, and took notes at his meetings with generals. In every way, she was the perfect Alethi wife. But her unhappiness crushed his soul. Eventually, they reached the plains around the lake, crossing the riverbed, which was dry except during storms. The rock buds drank so fully of the local water supply they'd grown to enormous sizes. Some were taller than a man's waist, and the vines they produced were as thick as Dalinar's wrist. He rode alongside the carriage, his horse's hooves beating a familiar rhythm on the stones beneath, and smelled incense. Evie's hand reached out of her carriage's side window, and she placed another glyph ward into the censer. He didn't see her face, and her hand retreated quickly. Storming woman. An Alethi would be using this as a ploy to guilt him into bending. But she wasn't Alethi, for all her earnest imitations. Evie was far too genuine, and her tears were real. She sincerely thought their spat back in the Vaden Fortress boded ill for their relationship. That bothered him, more than he wanted to admit. A young scout jogged up to give him the latest report. The vanguard had secured his desired campground near the city. There had been no fighting yet, and he hadn't expected any. Tanalan would not abandon the walls around the rift to try to control ground beyond Bowshot. It was good news, but Dalinar still wanted to snap at the messenger. He wanted to snap at someone. Stormfather, this battle couldn't come soon enough. He restrained himself and sent the messenger woman away with a word of thanks. Why did he care so much about Evie's petulance? He'd never let his arguments with Gavilar bother him. Storms, he'd never let his arguments with Evie bother him this way before. It was strange. He could have the accolades of men, fame that stretched across a continent, but if she didn't admire him, he felt that he had somehow failed. Could he really ride into combat feeling like this? No, he couldn't. Then do something about it. As they wound through the plain of rockbuds, he called to the driver of Evie's carriage, having him stop. Then, handing his horse's reins to an attendant, he climbed into the carriage. Evie bit her lip as he settled down on the seat across from her. It smelled nice within. The incense was fainter here, while the creme dust of the road was blocked by wooden cloth. The cushions were plush, and she had some dried fruit in a dish. Even some chilled water.
"What is wrong?" she demanded.
"I was feeling saddle sore."
She cocked her head.
"Perhaps you could request a salve—"
"I want to talk, Evie," Dalinar said with a sigh. "I'm not actually sore."
"Oh."
She pulled her knees up against her chest. In here she had undone and rolled back her safe-hand sleeve, displaying her long, elegant fingers.
"Isn't this what you wanted?" Dalinar said, looking away from the safe hand. "You've been praying non-stop."
"For the heralds to soften your heart."
"Right. Well, they've done that. Here I am. Let's talk."
"No, Dalinar,"
she said, reaching across to fondly touch his knee.
"I wasn't praying for myself, but for those of your countrymen you are planning to kill."
"The rebels?"
"Men no different from you who happen to be born in another city. What would you have done had an army come to conquer your home?"
"I'd have fought," Dalinar said. "As they will. The better men will dominate."
"What gives you the right?"
"My sword," Dalinar shrugged. "If the Almighty wants us to rule, we'll win. If he doesn't, then we'll lose. I rather think he wants to see which of us is stronger."
"And is there no room for mercy?"
"Mercy landed us here in the first place. If they don't want to fight, they should give in to our rule."
"But—"
She looked down, hands in her lap.
"I'm sorry. I don't want another argument."
"I do," Dalinar said. "I like it when you stand up for yourself. I like it when you fight."
She blinked tears and looked away.
"Evie," Dalinar said.
"I hate what this does to you," she said softly. "I see beauty in you, Dalinar Kholin. I see a great man struggling against a terrible one. And sometimes you get this look in your eyes. A horrible, terrifying nothingness. Like you have become a creature with no heart, feasting upon souls to fill that void, dragging Painspren in your wake. It haunts me, Dalinar."
Dalinar shifted on the carriage seat. What did that even mean? A look in his eyes? Was this like when she'd claimed that people stored bad memories in their skin and needed to rub them off with a stone once a month? Westerners had some curiously superstitious beliefs.
"What would you have me do, Evie?" he asked softly.
"Have I won again?"
she said, sounding bitter.
"Another battle where I've bloodied you?"
I need to know what you want, so I can understand."
"Don't kill today. Hold back the monster."
"And the rebels? Their Bright Lord?"
"You spared that boy's life once before."
"An obvious mistake."
"A sign of humanity,"
Dalinar. You asked what I want. It is foolish, and I can see there is trouble here, that you have a duty, but I do not wish to see you kill. Do not feed it.
He rested his hand on hers. Eventually, the carriage slowed again, and Dalinar stepped out to survey an open area not clogged by rock buds. The vanguard waited there, 5,000 strong, assembled in perfect ranks. Tilib did like to put on a good show. Across the field, outside a bowshot, a wall broke the landscape with, seemingly, nothing to protect. The city was hidden in the rift in the stone. From the southwest, a breeze off the lake brought the fecund scent of weeds and creme. Tilib strode up, wearing his plate. Well, Adolin's plate. Evie's plate.
"Right, Lord," Tilib said. "A short time ago, a large guarded caravan left the rift. We hadn't the men to besiege the city, and you had ordered us not to engage. So I sent a scout team to tail them, men who know the area, but otherwise let the caravan escape."
"You did well," Dalinar said, taking his horse from a groom.
"Though I'd have liked to know who was bringing supplies to the rift, that might have been an attempt to draw you away into a skirmish. However, gather the vanguard now and bring them in behind me. Pass the word to the rest of the men. Have them form ranks, just in case." "Sir?" Tilib asked, shocked. "You don't want to rest the army before attacking?"
Dalinar swung into the saddle and rode past him at a trot, heading toward the rift. Tilib, usually so unflappable, cursed and shouted orders, then hurried to the vanguard, gathering them and marching them hastily behind Dalinar. Dalinar made sure not to get too far ahead. Soon he approached the walls of Rathalas, where the rebels had gathered, primarily archers. They wouldn't be expecting an attack so soon, but of course Dalinar wouldn't camp for long outside either, not exposed to the storms.
"Do not feed it."
Did she know that he considered this hunger inside of him, the bloodlust, to be something strangely external? A companion? Many of his officers felt the same. It was natural. You went to war, and the thrill was your reward. Dalinar's armorers arrived, and he climbed out of the saddle and stepped into the boots they provided, then held out his arms, letting them quickly strap on his breastplate and other sections of armor.
"Wait here,"
he told his men, then climbed back onto his horse and set his helm on his pommel. He walked his horse out onto the killing field, summoning his shard blade and resting it on his shoulder, reins in the other hand. Years had passed since his last assault on the rift. He imagined Gavilar racing ahead of him, Sadeus cursing from behind them and demanding prudence. Dalinar picked his way forward until he was about halfway to the gates. Any closer, and those archers were likely to start shooting. He was already well within their range. He stilled his horse and waited. There was some discussion on the walls. He could see the agitation among the soldiers. After about 30 minutes of him sitting there, his horse calmly licking the ground and nibbling at the grass that peeked out, the gates finally creaked open. A company of infantrymen poured out, accompanying two men on horseback. Dalinar dismissed the bald one with the purple birthmark across half his face. He was too old to be the boy Dalinar had spared. It had to be the younger man riding the white steed, cape streaming behind him. Yes, he had an eagerness to him, his horse threatening to outstrip his guards. And the way he stared daggers at Dalinar. This was Bright Lord Tanelon, son of the old Tanelon, whom Dalinar had bested after falling down into the rift itself. That furious fight across wooden bridges and then in a garden suspended from the side of the chasm. The group stopped about 50 feet from Dalinar.
"Have you come to parley?"
called the man with the birthmark on his face. Dalinar walked his horse closer so he wouldn't have to shout. Tanelon's guards raised shields and spears. Dalinar inspected them,
then the fortifications.
You've done well here. Pullman on the walls to push me off should I come in alone. Netting draped down at the top, which you can cut free to entangle me.
What do you want, tyrant?
Tantalon snapped. His voice had the typical nasal accent of a rifter's. Dalinar dismissed his blade and swung free of his horse, plate grinding on stone as he hit the ground.
Walk with me a moment, Bright Lord. I promise not to harm you unless I'm attacked first.
I'm supposed to take your word?
What did I do the last time we were together? Dalinar asked. When I had you in my hand, how did I act?
You robbed me.
And? Dalinar asked, meeting the younger man's violet eyes.
Tantalon measured him, tapping one finger against his saddle. Finally, he dismounted. The man with the birthmark put a hand on his shoulder, but the youthful Bright Lord pulled free.
I don't see what you hope to accomplish here, Blackthorn, Tantalon said, joining Dalinar. We have nothing to say to one another. What do I want to accomplish? Dalinar said, musing. I'm not certain. My brother is normally the talker.
He started walking along the corridor between the two hostile armies. Tantalon lingered, then jogged to catch up.
Your troops look good, Dalinar said. Brave, arrayed against a stronger force, yet determined.
They have strong motivation, Blackthorn. You murdered many of their fathers.
It will be a pity to destroy them in turn.
Assuming you can.
Dalinar stopped and turned to regard the shorter man. They stood on a too quiet field, where even the rock buds and the grass had the sense to withdraw.
Have I ever lost a battle, Tantalon? Dalinar asked softly. You know my reputation. Do you think it exaggerated?
The younger man shifted, looking over his shoulder toward where he had left his guards and advisers. When he looked back, he was more resolved.
Better to die trying to bring you down than to surrender.
You'd better be sure of that, Dalinar said. Because if I win here, I'm going to have to make an example. I'll break you, Tantalon. Your sorry weeping city will be held up before all who would defy my brother. Be absolutely certain you want to fight me, because once this starts, I will be forced to leave only widows and corpses to populate the rift.
The young nobleman's jaw slowly dropped.
My brother attempted words and politics to bring you into line, Dalinar said.
Well, I'm good at only one thing. He builds, I destroy. But because of the tears of a good woman, I have come, against my better judgment, to offer you an alternative. Let's find an accommodation that will spare your city.
An accommodation? You killed my father!
And someday a man will kill me, Dalinar said. My sons will curse his name as you curse mine. I hope they don't throw away thousands of lives in a hopeless battle because of that grudge. You want vengeance? Fine, let's duel. Me and you. I'll lend you a blade and plate and we'll face each other on equal grounds. I win and your people surrender.
And if I beat you, will your armies leave?
Hardly, Dalinar said. I suspect they'll fight harder. But they won't have me, and you'll have won your father's blade back. Who knows? Maybe you'll defeat the army. You'll have a better storming chance, at least.
Tantalon frowned at Dalinar.
You aren't the man I thought you were.
I'm the same man I've always been. But today that man doesn't want to kill anyone.
A sudden fire inside him raged against those words. Was he really going to such lengths to avoid the conflict he'd been so anticipating?
One of your own is working against you,
Tenelon suddenly said. The loyal high princes? There's a traitor among them.
I'd be surprised if there weren't several, Dalinar said. But yes, we know that one has been working with you.
A pity, Tenelon said. His men were here not an hour ago. A little earlier and you'd have caught them. Maybe they'd have been forced to join me and their master would have been pulled into the war.
He shook his head, then turned and walked back toward his advisors. Dalinar sighed in frustration. A dismissal. Well, there had never been much of a chance that this would work. He walked back to his horse and pulled himself up into the saddle. Tenelon mounted as well. Before riding back to his city, the man gave Dalinar a salute.
This is unfortunate, he said, but I see no other way. I cannot defeat you in a duel, Blackthorn. To try would be foolish. But your offer is appreciated.
Dalinar grunted, pulled on his helm, then turned his horse.
Unless,
Tenelon said.
Unless?
Unless, of course, this was really a ruse all along. A scheme arranged by your brother, you and me, Tenelon said. A false rebellion. Intended to trick disloyal high princes into revealing themselves.
Dalinar raised his faceplate and turned back.
Perhaps my outrage was feigned, Tenelon said. Perhaps we have been in touch since your attack here all those years ago. You did spare my life, after all.
Yes, Dalinar said, feeling a sudden surge of excitement. That would explain why Gavilar didn't immediately send our armies against you. We were in collusion all along.
What better proof than the fact that we just had this strange battlefield conversation?
Tenelon looked over his shoulder at the body of his men on the wall.
My men must be thinking it very odd. It will make sense when they hear the truth. That I was telling you about the envoy that had been here, delivering weapons and supplies to us from one of your secret enemies.